Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Good news for patients who have previously been unable to communicate easily. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is February 20th, 2013. And we are on day three of Newsworthy Clips. It's on page 32 in your Advanced magazine, and you actually can find all 3 days of Newsworthy Clips on pages 30 through 32. Today we're on February 20th. Scientists may have a way to communicate with paralyzed, and we're going to be examining some breakthroughs that neuroscientists have made in communications for patients who are either paralyzed or maybe comatose or seemingly comatose patients, people who really can't communicate. They just can't speak, or they can't even move their hands. They certainly can't write. At best, they might be able to just to make, blinks of their eyes or just slight twitches in the parts of their face or something like that to communicate, say yes or no. So this is a major, major breakthrough. Ironically, this ties in with our first day, doesn't it, Amanda?
It does. There we were talking about the prototype bionic eye, where technology is also helping people with vision problems.
Yeah.
But here, again, we're looking at people that can't communicate at all.
Yeah. All right. That was Amanda Young-Pier. Listeners, also joining us back for day three is Carolyn Bug. Hi, Carolyn.
Well, hello.
Yeah. And it's something that it's kind of we did this on purpose as far as tying the two articles together, as far as bringing together the technology and medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think all three of them are talking about health benefits and ways that studies are showing we can make progress and reduce pain, have vision for those who are blind, and here being able to communicate with people who are paralyzed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of all 3 days, all three articles, what did we talk about yesterday?
Well, yesterday we talked about a study that finds new benefits for coffee, reducing pain.
Yeah. All right. So this was an accidental finding in a way. The study was designed to study pain, but they didn't set out to compare pain levels in coffee drinkers and non-coffee drinkers. It just happened, right?
Right. Yes. They were trying to compare pain levels in office workers who have chronic pain and those who do not.
Okay. You mentioned chronic. That's a great word from yesterday. What's that mean, chronic?
Well, chronic means that it is ongoing or long-lasting, and here it's talking about pain. So if you suffer from chronic pain, then you have that pain every day.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the other words that we talked about – actually, there's two words that I wanted to mention from yesterday. We talked about vigor and fatigue, Amanda.
Well, vigor means to have energy or be full of energy, and fatigue is quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It means to be very tired,
yeah,
to the point where you possibly don't want to move your body at all.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Amanda's a big coffee drinker. How's your pain level today?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
But I could use some more coffee.
All right. We'll get some after the program.
Okay.
Then. So, well, listeners, we are on day three of Newsworthy Clips. And as I said, turn to page 32. And the article is Scientists May Have a Way to Communicate with Paralyzed. So we're going to break it down into three readings. Our first reading will be the left column going down to line 19.
Scientists may have way to communicate with paralyzed. Neuroscientists unveiled a way to potentially communicate with paralyzed or seemingly comatose patients using brain imaging machines in a recent report. The finding follows on 2 decades of neuroscientists looking for ways to translate brain signals into messages to help locked-in paralyzed patients such as those with Lou Gehrig's disease. researchers have made increasing advances in using devices that detect brain activity to help paralyzed patients, ones who often are forced to rely on eye blinks or facial muscle twitches to slowly send messages.
All right. Now, we see there in the first sentence, we're learning about who was working on this, Amanda.
Neuroscientists. And neuroscientists are scientists that study the brain.
Okay.
Neuro is the science word for neurology, anything to do with the brain.
Okay. And what did they do?
They unveiled a way to potentially communicate with paralyzed or seemingly comatose patients.
Okay. So they unveiled or they revealed, they showed to the world a new way to possibly communicate with paralyzed. Now, when we say paralyzed first, what's that mean?
Paralyzed means that they have no, they're unable to move their body. Generally, it's due to an injury of the spinal cord, and you can be paralyzed from the waist down, or you can be paralyzed from the neck down.
Right. Waist down would be a paraplegic, and neck down would be a quadriplegic. So, and often this might happen through an accident, car accident, things like that. So people become paralyzed. And there's a big difference as far as the degree of paralyzation. And some people they can't move. Even as quadriplegics, maybe they just can't move anything. They're even barely able to speak. Some people can't even speak. So it's very difficult for them to communicate. And then we also see here seemingly comatose. And first off, comatose.
Yeah, so a comatose is like being in a coma. You are unconscious. You're not aware of what's going on around you, kind of like a deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I was confused about this a little bit, but the key word here is seemingly comatose, because seemingly comatose patients still will have some awareness of some kind. For instance, I have read stories where a patient will be, quote, comatose, but their family will be there. And if they will speak to the patient might be able to squeeze the hand. They actually can respond to, like, their family members asking them questions. So that's what we mean seemingly comatose. They're lying there. They're not moving. They seem to be asleep. But there is some awareness. They can hear. There's some senses that they're able to engage. So, but again, they are not able to communicate. They certainly can't speak up and say what they want or what they need as far as food or bathing or medicine or anything like that. So now, the neuroscientists unveiled this, and it's for patients. And how are the neuroscientists doing this? What are they using?
Well, they're actually able to use a brain imaging machine. And a brain imaging, first of all, brain imaging is in our vocabulary focus. It's a noun. And that's where they use the process of using computer equipment to produce a complete or detailed picture of the brain. And they use this in clinical diagnosis.
Okay. Now, it's mentioned later in the article, MRI. And actually, I'm gonna mention this right now because we're talking about this throughout this article today. MRI is a magnetic resonance imaging machine. That's actually an MRI machine that you see there pictured at the bottom of page 32 in the bottom left corner. So that's the first part of it. The MRI actually can produce an image of the brain, not just the brain, but all parts of our body, and actually uses sound waves to do that. Now, what they're then doing is taking the signals from this MRI equipment, and then they are then plugging it into their computer systems to then help with this communication process. So I did want to mention MRI right now so that you know about it in the beginning of what we're talking about. Next paragraph.
The finding follows on two decades of neuroscientists looking for ways to translate brain signals into messages to help locked-in, paralyzed patients. So they've been spending 20 years trying to develop a way to translate brain signals into messages, because it's not very easy. It's not a keyboard. You can't just type on it.
Yeah.
These are people who can't move.
So they have been studying this. How do we get this communication? Again, we go back to day one of Newsworthy Clips because we were talking about the electrical impulses that are sent from the eye through the brain that actually create vision. And so this is actually somewhat similar. We're talking about brain signals being turned into messages. So that is the connection between day three and day one of Newsworthy Clips. And they're trying to translate these signals into messages to help locked in paralyzed patients.
Right. And here they're meaning they're confined. They're unable to get out of something. So you mentioned earlier some of them are paralyzed. Some of them are seemingly comatose. So they're not fully able to have freedom or communicate. So therefore, we say locked in.
Locked in. You have no options when you are locked in. Sometimes you can also be locked in different things, locked in traffic. You can be locked in a contract, locked into a job, locked in a relationship, something that you cannot get out of. So this is actually a good idiom that you can use in many situations where you have no options, no way out. Now, talk about paralyzed patients, but then we talk about some other patients.
Yes, such as those with Lou Gehrig's disease. And that's a very serious disease that typically causes rapidly progressive weakness, speaking and swallowing difficulty, and a decline in breathing ability.
Yeah. So Lou Gehrig's disease, sometimes you'll see it shown as ALS, but it's actually a muscle and nerve-related disease where patients quickly lose their ability to function. The body breaks down and they cannot do really simple things, even eating, drinking. They can't be moving. And probably the most famous Lou Gehrig disease or ALS patient is Stephen Hawking, the world-famous scientist. Well, the miracle of Stephen Hawking is I don't know how he's lived so long. Usually most ALS or Lou Gehrig patients will die within 5 years from their diagnosis. So the neuroscientists are trying to communicate with these people. Now, as we see in line 15, researchers have made increasing advances
in using devices that detect brain activity to help these paralyzed patients.
Okay. So they have made advances over the past 20 years. And, we learn about how these patients have been able to or have had to communicate.
Yes. It says ones who often are forced to rely on eye blinks or facial muscle twitches to slowly send messages. So they communicate by blinking their eyes, twitching their face, so because they don't have muscle control over the rest of their body. So they try to come up with some sort of system of signals to communicate this way.
Well, you can imagine this would be so slow to send the messages, and actually it's just an arduous or very difficult procedure for them, but they really have no choice because they're locked in to this situation, locked into this condition. Let's move on with our second reading for today. It will be the rest of that left column.
In the journal Current Biology, a neuroscience team led by Bettina Sorger of Maastricht University in the Netherlands reports that the scanning machines translated signals in the brains of 6 healthy volunteers into letters, enabling them to spell messages. This is not mind reading. It is under the person's control, so it is more like a typewriter for the brain, Sorger says. In the study, the volunteers could use their brains to deliver signals that were translated into letters by the scanners and finally into whole messages, typically taking them an hour or less to learn how to do it.
Okay, we learn a little bit more about the study and some of the things that were discovered, as we see here in the journal Current Biology. I'm on line 20. There in the journal Current Biology, a neuroscience team led by Bettina Sorger of Maastricht University in the Netherlands. What did they report?
Well, she reports that the scanning machines translated signals in the brains of 6 healthy volunteers into letters, enabling them to spell messages.
Okay, so I talked a little bit earlier about the scanning machines. They're using the MRI machine, which is pictured down below, and they are taking the brain signals, and they are then sending it to their computer systems that analyze this, and they are actually able to convert the brain signals into letters. So that's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit earlier how, on day one, how the system could take light images and convert it into vision for blind patients. This is, you know, a little bit different twist on all of this, but they're actually taking brain signals, turning it into letters. And what does this allow the patients to do?
It allows them to spell messages.
Yeah. So they can move away from these facial muscle twitches or the eye blinks, and they actually can use their mind to send messages.
Right. It would be a lot quicker, too.
Oh, that's amazing. Not only quicker, but just imagine how frustrating it would be to be one of these patients and not really being able to express yourself to your family, your friends. Right? All you can do is pretty much yes, no, you know, like, don't like, want, not want. But and this is like a whole new world of opening up like their thinking and being able to express their thoughts towards people and being able to say things to their family and friends that are much more in detail than what they've been able to do as a patient. So, all right. And Bettina Sorger continues in the next paragraph.
Yes, she says, this is not mind reading, which it sounds a little bit like it, but she says it is under the person's control. So it is more like a typewriter for the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and this is something that the patient is participating in. That's why she's saying it's not mind reading. This is something they want. They want their thoughts to be known. So, and it's interesting, you had mentioned typewriter before, Carolyn.
Yes, well, I had mentioned that it was like a keyboard.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this way patients are able to type out or spell out their thoughts.
Yeah.
Using their brainwaves, and it's very, very remarkable.
They can use their mind, their brainwaves, to type up messages. So, and then we continue in the study.
The volunteers could use their brains to deliver signals that were translated into letters by the scanners and finally into whole messages.
Okay. So this is wonderful. They can just use their brains to deliver whole messages. Whole messages. That's a key term there. Whole messages. Not just bits and bytes of information, but whole messages. And were they able to pick it up easily?
Yes. Typically, it only took them an hour or less to learn how to use these scanners. And a scanner is just something that changes images or text into an electronic form.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine the breakthrough for these patients. Imagine you're one of these patients being able to do that. So now, again, much like the Australian woman in day one, Diane Ashworth, who had to be connected to the equipment, the patients in this case, they also need to be connected to the equipment. So it's sophisticated equipment, and they need to be in a certain facility to be able to do this. However, again, it's a breakthrough. It's a step forward, and it's just one step in the process. Eventually, there may become a more easier portable devices. An MRI machine is not portable.
No.
So there may be a way in the future to make more portable devices to where these patients can have this at home.
Mm-hmm.
So scanners at home and things that can read the brain signals. So let's get on with our final reading for today.
The scanner decoded signals using a data mining computer technique essential to translating brain signals into words. For affected patients, time is not the most pressing matter compared to just being able to communicate, Sorger says. The method, along with the state-of-the-art data mining technique, can be used to create a brain-controlled keyboard, says Harvard neuroscientist Sung-Shik Yu, who was not part of the study. For me, if this helps even one person, it will have been worth the effort, says Sorger, who first came up with the way to translate MRI signals into letters as she was drifting off to sleep. I wrote the idea down in a hurry. I didn't want to lose it.
Bill Quinn here with Amanda Youngpeer and Carolyn Bug. We're on day three of Newsworthy Clips, and this is our final section of this day. Scientists may have a way to communicate with paralyzed. It's an interesting study as far as some new breakthroughs that neuroscientists have made in actually reading the brain signals of paralyzed or seemingly comatose patients, people that are locked into situations where they can't move, can't communicate, and the only way they've been able to communicate in the past has been maybe through facial twitches or blinkings of their eyes. So this is a tremendous breakthrough. Now they can actually, the scanners can actually read the brain signals and actually translate it into messages. It's like a keyboard for the brain, keyboard for their thoughts, and it's tremendous. So now they can do it quicker and also in much more detail. Now, we start out this section, the top of the right column there. The scanner decoded signals
using a data mining computer technique. And we learn in our vocabulary focus that the data mining is a noun, and it's where they use the examination of large amounts of information that are stored in a computer in order to look for patterns and changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the scanner is going to have to look at the entire brain, maybe sections of the brain, but still you can imagine there's going to be millions of pieces of data and information. That's why they need a data mining computer technique, because they're going to have to sift through, S-I-F-T, sift through all sorts of data to find the ones that are meant for communication. So it's not a real simple process. Mm. All right. It is essential to translating brain signals into words. And we hear from Bettina Sorger again.
Yes, she says, for affected patients, time is not the most pressing matter compared to just being able to communicate.
Now, what does that sentence mean?
Well, these patients are paralyzed or almost comatose, so they don't have a lot of activities going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about getting their messages out as quickly as possible. It's just being able to talk to their family,
yeah,
talk to their doctors, their friends, really being able to communicate their thoughts.
Yeah. Time is not the most pressing matter. It means they have plenty of time to do this. So they have time to learn and time to communicate with this. So trade-off for them, just being able to communicate,
right,
is worth all of the time and the effort that they have to put into it. So, and we hear from another neuroscientist in the next paragraph.
Yes, we hear the method along with the state-of-the-art data mining technique can be used to create a brain-controlled keyboard. So again, we've heard, like Carolyn mentioned earlier, keyboard. We talked about a typewriter. And I just want to bring attention to, we say, along with the state-of-the-art.
Mm-hmm.
A state-of-the-art meaning the most advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And that this can be used to create a brain-controlled keyboard.
Okay, and that comes from Harvard neuroscientist Sung-Shik Yu, who was not part of this study, but certainly is part of the field and certainly interested in whatever breakthrough there is made in any part of the world on this. So they can all take this information and add it to their findings to create a brain-controlled keyboard. Now, we go back to Bettina Sorger there at the university in the Netherlands, and she says,
for me, if this helps even one person, it will have been worth the effort. And she first came up with this way to translate MRI signals into letters as she was drifting off to sleep.
Okay. Now, first, I had mentioned MRI earlier in the article because I wanted everybody to know what that machine was. MRI, again, stands for magnetic resonance imaging. That's a way of using sound waves to create an image of organs inside of you and to look inside of you. It's non-invasive, and actually it's a safer way than a CT scan. CT scan uses high-powered x-rays. MRIs are actually recommended for frequent uses because they don't cause radiation. So doctors often will prefer an MRI when they can to help patients avoid radiation. So now the MRI signals translated into letters. And this is Bettina Sorger. She's talking about this, and it came to her when she was drifting off to sleep.
That's right. Drifting off here means to gradually go to sleep or gradually start to fall into sleep.
Yeah. You mentioned something during a break, Amanda, that you often will have a lot of thoughts come to mind when you're drifting off.
I do.
Yeah.
Actually, this actually made me think about when just before I fall asleep, what do I think about?
Right.
Right. And then I realize I actually do have a lot of ideas as I'm drifting off to sleep, but I am not wise like this lady is, and I don't write it down.
Do you write things down like that, Carolyn?
Well, sometimes I keep a journal and write down some of my more interesting thoughts, but I don't usually write things down before I fall asleep.
You know, what's funny is I actually have learned to do that because I have great thoughts right before I go to sleep, right? So I have these tremendous thoughts in my mind about all these great things I'm going to accomplish. I have learned I have to write this stuff down because when I wake up in the morning, no way do I remember it. It's gone. It's gone, and I wake up, and I'm like, what was I thinking about last night? So I have learned if I think about anything, like at night when I'm about to fall asleep, I better write that down. So actually I do now. I actually keep like a pen or a pencil and like a notebook next to me. There's a chair next to my bed, when these wonderful, fabulous thoughts come to my mind, I write them down. And then I wake up in the morning, and there they are. And then I laugh. I'm like, oh, silly Bill. But I do recommend that to our listeners. Keep something next to your bed that you can write down these ideas, because you will not remember it when you wake up. Do you forget the stuff?
I forget it a lot. Yeah, so I need to do that.
Yes, I probably should write things down because I will forget it.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe we could get the listeners to write in some of the ideas that they've had before they've drifted off to sleep.
I would love to hear about that, listeners. So if you've got some really cute stories about things you've like thought about right before you've gone to sleep, send us a note. Write us at letters@studioclassroom.com or send us a little note there on Facebook. Post it there. Let us know about any tremendous thoughts you've had right before you drift off. Well, thanks for joining us here for 3 days of Newsworthy Clips. Come on back next time. Till then, this is Bill.
This is Carolyn.
And Amanda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.